So my name is Sil Stachov, and I'm the author of RSpamD, fast email spam filtering system. And in this presentation, I would like to give some sort of general view of RSpamD with some showcases, examples, some detailed descriptions sometimes. So I'll try to make it not boring, but let me know if it's too boring. So I'll start with introduction, as usually. So why RSpamD was created? What was the traditional approach? Why it was wrong in our purposes, for our purposes? And what was better with RSpamD? So the standard setup is the following. So basically, you have MTA that performs some fast lookups, for instance, in RBLs. And for instance, you can imagine this as postfix plus policy D, field policy D. Then you have some sort of helper, usually communicated via Milter. And then you have some sort of slow content scanning layer, traditionally Spam Assassin, but it can be any other filter. But mainly, I'm talking about Spam Assassin because it was our preceder in our spam filtering systems, in both spam filtering systems that I've migrated to RSpamD. Actually, what do you think? Is that your MTA is fast? RBL lookups are fast. Your helper might be slower because it performs more complicated things like antivirus scanning, like probably some sort of regular expressions and so on and so forth. And your spam layer, spam filtering layer, is the slowest one, and that's really true. But actually, for modern mail flows, it happens like this one. So even your RBL lookups, if they're performed synchronously, is quite slow. So if you perform RBL lookups one by one, currently we have more than 10 publicly used RBLs, and some commercial services provide even more. And if you search for 10 RBLs making 10 DNS requests one by one, it might be quite slow just because of latency issues between your recursor and your MTA. Your helper service is even slower, because, well, antivirus services are usually really slow. And if you want to do like multiple services scan, it can introduce delays for more than 10 seconds each. And the main problem in two companies where I worked was spam filtering layer. And it was just like it died on all load increase. So if your load increases, your spam layer is the first candidate to die. And that's exactly the problem that was initially the cause of creation of RSpamD. So basically, our system is quite simple. So you have MTA. It communicates directly to RSpamD via Milter protocol. And for now, it sometimes uses like RBL lookups for via filtering. But one of my priority tasks is to create like attachments of certain plugins to wire stages. So for instance, it's possible to plug RBL to like recipients check and perform weighted RBLs before doing anything else. So we can reject sender by like sum of RBLs. So if multiple trusted RBLs tells that this IP is bad and it's not whitelisted, and probably we can check SPF, we can check reputation, and if everything tells that this is spam, we can just stop dialogue and do nothing with this client. It's actually way better than the traditional approach to block by any RBL, obviously. So the first showcase was actually RSpamD in Rambler, where I've created RSpamD as a project. So Rambler is one of the free mails in Russia. It was quite popular. Now it loses popularity, but I'm not quite sure why does it happen. So initially, it was a small prototype that could just perform some sort of regular expression filtering and nothing else. And we had the same issues with Spam Assassin, so it occupies CPU, and we had to increase number of servers. When we've moved to this prototype, we've seen that it was to be developed. And some of the recent starts from Rambler, so it's a machine with quite an old Sandy Bridge Xeon machines. And as far as you see, it filtered quite a decent traffic on its own. And here are some results on efficiency. But the slides are quite old because I am no longer in Rambler, but it tells how RSpMD can work. So now some words about RSpMD architecture as is. So actually, it could be separated into two main layers. One layer is proxy layer that performs forwarding, encryption, load balancing, and so on and so forth. I'll show it a bit later. And there is a scan layer that can run on a separate host, on the same host. If you have large system, then you just move scan layer from MTA and proxy layer. If you have a small system, then you just mix everything together. And in scanning layer, you have like core that performs all MIME parsing, events, networking, and so on and so forth. And you have set of plugins and toolings that perform content scanning. And obviously, you need data storage for storing like volatile and non-volatile data. So volatile data is something that can be written quite frequently, like reputation, maybe rate limits, gray listing, triplets, and so on and so forth. And non-volatile is something that is more like intelligence. So for instance, fuzzy hashes, bias data, and so on. So for RSpMD design principles, one of the main goals was performance. So all the time, I was thinking about performance. If I do something, I think, how can it be done better? How can I do things faster? And how can I do things with more concurrence level? RSpMD is also not just a bias filter. It includes everything, at least I hope. Technically, currently, RSpMD is a Lua application server. What does it mean? It means that you can do everything that is provided by Lua API. So I have some examples when RSpMD is used not as a content filter, but as an archiving storage. For instance, to save emails to Amazon S3. For instance, to save messages to your IMAP folder. It's all doable with just RSpMD basic functionality extended by Lua. And another thing that I kept in my mind was actually support for Unicode. Because it's really a disaster in the modern world how emails could be obfuscated using Unicode. Zero white spaces, zero characters, different canonicalization, different composition types, and so on and so forth. So you can write a single word with different variances. So for instance, you can change kind of font, kind of glyphs, and that's all Unicode composition. So instead of normal word like test, you would see lots of crap that is by human, it's still test. But from the side of byte stream, it's completely mess. And that's something that RSpMD tries to do better than everything else. So far, I work in Mimecast. That's a large email services provider. And obviously, we need decent spam filtering. However, the initial thing why we've moved to RSpMD was this one. So you can see on this graph how was the load before RSpMD migration and after. In this graph, you can see it better, probably. So for our purposes, the load average of 10 was like high limit on all our servers. And as far as you see, after RSpMD migration, we don't see anything with some sort of foreground, like sort of background Java services, actually. So RSpMD wasn't even on top after that. And what's more important, that both SpamAssassin and RSpMD were using the same rules. Because I have written a special plugin that adopts SpamAssassin rules for RSpMD. So here are some numbers. We have more than 4,000 of custom SpamAssassin rules. Most of them are legacy, but there are like a thousand and a half of full body regular expressions or content regular expressions. So something that was very expensive. And actually, if you return to this graph shows the initial RSpMD version without all optimizations I'll be talking about in this presentation, just in case. So far, we have more than 1,000 of custom native rules, so we are improving our own rule bases, rules base using just responsive rules. What's more important that we have like 500,000 of entries in different maps. We have more than 100 of maps, like IP addresses, IP networks, regular expressions, different domains, and so on and so forth. So we perform lots of check-in based on maps, and they change it very frequently. And we process more than 150 million of messages per day. And the average spam scanning time is less than a second. So that are current results. So the main issues were with regular expressions, obviously, so they must be fast, counting 1,500 of regular expressions for full body. Maps lookups are also very crucial for performance, so it needs to be fast. We have very high concurrency on emails processing because we process lots of messages simultaneously. Some checks can be slow. For instance, if we have some sort of hard DNS checks, hard OAM anti-spam checks, and so on and so forth. So we need to keep lots of messages in memory being processed simultaneously. And we have quite a large scale. So we have lots of data centers in different continents. One is in Germany, for instance. And we need to scale all our infrastructure over all these geographically distributed data centers and networks. So the first thing I was working in this showcase was how to optimize regular expressions. So basically, I will talk about Hyperscan engine that is developed by Intel. So we need to match lots of regular expressions with the same data. So we have lots of regular expressions and the same data. So that were numbers with plain naive PCRE extension. So basically, we have around 1 gigabyte of data processed via multiple regular expressions for a small message. I'm not quite sure what's length. So 600 kilo. But unlike traditional regular expressions, we don't need to capture data, we don't need to do replacement, we don't need to do look behind, look around, look forward, and so on and so forth. So basically, this is not needed for the vast majority of scans. But also, we need to match Unicode, and we need to match raw data, and we need to distinguish that somehow. And obviously, for legacy reasons, not even for legacy, for compatibility reasons, let's say so. For compatibility reasons, we need to be compatible with PCRE syntax because Spam Assassin uses Perl, and we have 4,000 of Spam Assassin rules, and nobody would rewrite it. So the naive solution was to link all regular expressions into one large pipeline of regular expressions, and then decide finite state automata machines of PCRE would do with this pipeline. But actually, it won't work for this particular example because we will match the first prefix and ignore everything else. And that doesn't work because we need all symbols and all hits. And that's what Hyperscan is done for. So basically, we organize all regular expressions in a large state machine. So there is lots of black magic inside of Hyperscan how to build a state machine. So there are lots of engines, lots of optimizations for current architecture. So something like fat binary, so it tries to get the most appropriate instructions when it's compiled. But actually, after all, it's blazingly fast. So even for a single regular expression, I did a benchmark. It's much faster than PCRE, even with JIT. So Hyperscan is really one of the fastest string matching engine I've ever seen. And actually, then we split our data into pieces, like data classes. So for instance, data class of data class of message body, data class of text, data class of header equal to subject, and so on and so forth. And then we subsequently go through all these classes and match Hyperscan engines and get results. One of the main problem with Hyperscan was actually slow compile time. So it's really more than 100 times slower than PCRE plus JIT. But with the recent version, it's not that bad. But still for large corpuses, especially for our corpuses in Mimecast, it was blazingly slow. And unfortunately, some of features of PCRE aren't supported, on, like look behind, look forward, or something like this. Because it's a non-backtracking engine, and backtracking is not supported, so some certain constructions are just meaningless in Hyperscan. And it's not packaged in sane mode for the vast majority of operation systems. So we did it for FreeBSD, but for Linuxes that are commonly used, it's unfortunately not packaged. So the idea was quite simple. So RSpmd forks a special process that performs a compilation of all these regular expressions. It also tests regular expressions because in the past we found out that some regular expressions caused full hang of Hyperscan. So it just spawns a process, performs compilation. If this process is too long to respond, it kills process and tells that, okay, this regular expression is our exception. In the same time, we still perform scanning of messages using PCRE fallback. Then this worker tells that, okay, our regular expressions are compiled. We can load them and switch to Hyperscan. So in this case, we don't affect the starting time. And we also rely on serialized representation of these finite state machines. And we don't need to recompile it each time. Unless you change your regular expressions, of course. So for unsupported features, we still use Hyperscan because luckily Intel engineers are clever enough to implement so-called pre-filter mode. So in pre-filter mode, it creates some sort of state machine that tries to be compatible with all that can match with this particular unsupported PCRE expression. And then we just do this pre-filter that can produce false positives. And then we recheck this data using PCRE. It's way more cheaper than to perform full PCRE checks for everything. So that are changes after Hyperscan. Unfortunately, I have no graphs. But you can see the average time for this particular message that has significantly decreased. And it's not only like time here. It's also time on CPU. So if you have high concurrency on PCRE JIT, it was burning CPUs a lot. Another thing that's quite important in RSpmd is how to process rules. So unlike Spam Assassin and unlike maybe other engines, RSpmd processes all rules using this core functionality simultaneously. So in traditional approach, we just process rule one by one. But unfortunately, if you may need to make some sort of a network request, like DNS request, you need to wait. And if you need to create lots of DNS requests, you need to wait for all request sequentially. In the event-driven processing model, you don't need to wait unless you have some sort of sequence points, and you can do all these requests at the same time. So basically, the main advantage that you can do all requests at the same time, and it actually fits with the models of how resolvers work and all other services work, and actually it's quite useful. The main disadvantage is that the development was much more complicated than with traditional approach because you need to deal with callbacks, and in plain C, it's a disaster, to tell the truth. So now I'm trying to do everything in Lua because in Lua, you can have closures, you have like functions and functions, and you can return functions, so functions are objects of the first order, and it's much more easy to deal with asynchronous model in Lua than in plain C. But unfortunately, the core needs to be written in C. Another problem is to limit concurrency. So unfortunately, we cannot send like 100,000 of DNS requests to a recursor without health problem for the last one. So for instance, this message was created to cheat Spam Assassin. And in Spam Assassin, it was scanned for more than 2 minutes. After that, Spam Assassin crashed. In RSpmd, it was not that bad, but it was still quite bad because of number of DNS requests. So with that particular message I've shown in the previous slide, right? I've made a fix in like a couple of maybe hours, maybe days. And the problem is how to live on rolling releases. So I usually suggest people who are working on large scale systems to live on rolling releases, because bugs, features, and like new sorts of spam are appearing all the time. And unfortunately, I cannot do releases like each day. And that's why I like build sort of experimental packages. And what I assume that these packages should be used with care. And that's why this proxy layer exists. That's not the only reason, but it's one of the main reasons why I've created this proxy layer. So basically, the schema is quite simple. So you have a main cluster, you don't touch it. It lives on rolling release, which is good enough for your purposes. Then you are going to switch to another release, maybe twice a day. Then you roll it on testing cluster and compare results, watch for new crashes, watch for new malfunction, compare results, and decide whether this new rolling release is good enough for your purposes or not. That's how I suggest to live for large-scale systems. For small systems, it's not necessary because basically it's too complicated, I suppose. In Mimecast, we have even different things. So we do load testing on this testing cluster. So we sometimes increase load up to 10 times higher than normal scanners, just to ensure that we have like a capacity to deal with spikes and so on and so forth. And for local scanning, we use zero copy scan. So RSpMD is clever enough to send data transparently through proxy. So you won't wait for testing results, you won't wait for nothing. So basically introducing proxy just for like local machine doesn't introduce anything, any delay. And also we can do retries. So basically, if your local scan is failing, you can go to another machine and do another scan. And for instance, you can dedicate some sort of piece of your cluster for just for fallback. So if you have some problematic message, it will be sent to these fresh boxes that could be used to do better scanning. Another thing that is quite important nowadays is dekim signing. We also do this via RSpMD. It was quite a long story about moving from other dekim verification and signing engines to RSpMD, but it's now live. So what's special in RSpMD dekim signing? First of all, its own implementation. It's written from scratch, again, oriented on performance, and it's quite compact, so it's not more than maybe a couple thousand, 100, maybe 2,000 lines of code. But it's much less than other dekim code bases, like OpenDKIM. Also, I've tried my best to adopt to different line engines. For instance, some MTA inserts final line ending. Some MTAs doesn't insert this line ending. Sometimes you need to normalize your line endings from CR or Sol LFs to CRLFs, so on and so forth. And RSpMD tries to deal with this situation where it's possible. Obviously, I don't do two checks, one with normalized and one unnormalized, because it will be too expensive. But aside that, RSpMD tries to fix broken signers. Another speciality is that signing is almost completely written in Lua. And it's actually quite easy to extend it. For instance, I've added ARC support in one day after listening of some conference and during mock session. And it's quite easy to debug, unlike C. With the recent releases, RSpMD supports both RSA and ED25519 signatures, both for signing and check verification. I think it's the only signing engine that supports ED25519 signing. So we've not done any like interoperation testing for this. But since it's RFC now, probably we will see more Edito 519 signatures in emails. At least I hope so, because RSA is not very suitable for this. And also, RSpmd can check public key validity. So if you sign something with private key, RSpmd can go to DNS, fetch public key, compare results, and skip signing if, for instance, key is invalid. Recently, I found some failures for signing. And actually, another problem is how to forward messages with DKIM signatures. So basically, many MTAs, and our MTA is not an exception, modify messages on transit, like normalization, like maybe some URLs normalization, some attachment deletion or addition or whatever, signatures and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, if you have DKIM signed messages, after this procedure, this DKIM signature becomes invalid. And actually, it makes users unhappy, especially in Gmail. An obvious solution is to add another DKIM signature, or maybe to remove the original DKIM signature. And sometimes it works. But for this particular case of PayPal, it won't work because PayPal has strict policy in DMARC. And the only thing how to deal with this is actually to perform ARC signing. So it's not a universal solution, unfortunately. So for now, ARC is supported by Microsoft, Yahoo, and G Suite among large ESPs. Probably some other services also supports ARC, but it's relatively new technology, and it's much more complicated than plain DKIM. So it's more like received headers, but with signatures. So basically, you just form authenticated results chain. When you get, okay, I get this message, it was fine when I see it, then I modify it, then I add my own signature, and trust me, I'm a good guy, this signature was valid. If Gmail trusts you, then Gmail will show something like, okay, message has been modified, but I'm still confident that this guy won't do bad things. So this is a question of reputation, as usually. But for G Suite, for Yahoo, and for Microsoft, it works pretty well. So in our case, we do this schema of the DKIM signing. So basically, we do two passes. On first pass, RSpmd sees message and provides authentication results. So the DKIM was fine, SPF was fine, the DMARC was fine, probably ARC was fine. Then it returns these authentication results back to MTA. MTA performs all these modifications. And then RSpmd is given this message one more time to extract authentication results and perform ARC sealing. And this works fine with G Suite. Unfortunately, for the open source MTAs, it's more complicated. So I've tried to do it for FreeBSD mailing lists with Mailman. And for some cases it works, for some cases it doesn't. And unfortunately, it's very hard to understand because there are too many loops, but we are working on this. But another thing is how to distinguish these passes, and it's done by user settings. So basically, in HTTP request for RSpmd scan, MTA tells that for this scan, apply these symbols, like DKIM check, SPF check, DMARC check. For this pass, apply only one symbol, ARC sign, and everything else should be disabled. And that's how it works. Aside of these show cases, RSpmd is open source spam filter. For me, it's good because I can use it for my own email. So that's how my Thunderbird looks like. And as far as you see, there is my ham folder, and green and red circles are like spaminess flags, and that's a special add-on for Thunderbird. Of course, running of open source spam filter is quite difficult. First of all, we have to publish all rules. We have to publish the source code. And also, obviously, spammers will use this data to test their messages and to hack your systems. And they actually do it. So I've seen that some spammer tried to find the format of URLs that is not noticed by RSpmd. And I've spent like half a day of adding new and new workarounds to build the same extractor. And that spammer gave up. Because basically we were living on rolling releases and time to production was like 1 minute. So basically, okay, he did this, he has invented this URL obfuscation. Okay, let's do this, push it. No, this spam is blocked. Then that spammer changed it slightly. Then again, do something, push, test, blocked. Finally, he gave up because, well, it's like difficult to invent things that are still recognized by email clients, but not recognized by spam filter. Community management is really very complicated. So unfortunately, it spends lots of time. I need to spend lots of time, and management of different issue trackers, internal, external, is quite exhausting. And you need to, and there are lots of requests about I need that. This thing is broken. But it's literally impossible to cover all use cases, unfortunately. And another problem is that RSpmd has to deal with lots of different languages, so. Many traditional approaches doesn't work. So to build sane anti-spam that is open source, you need to provide some sane defaults. You need to use external intelligence. I mean something like SURBL, SpamHouse, other RBLs, and probably some other services. And then you need to build your own intelligence when you are building your spam filtering solution. Because basically, RSpmd out of the box can filter some stupid spam. But to build some sort of sane solution that works for you, you might need to do more and get more intelligence. What do I mean by intelligence? It's actually something like reputation, something like machine learning. That's a buzzword, I know. But to tell the truth, RSpmd provides lots of methods to use these techniques. But I personally think that bias is one of the best ones. And of course, if you want to block something that you don't like, you might want to write your own rules and maybe plugins. Now I'd like to talk something about bias. We have a long lecture about bias in context of CRM 114 after in one talk later. And actually, I've used almost all ideas I've implemented in RSpmd from CRM 114. So this algorithm is called hidden Markov model for bias. And I've taken it from two papers and from CRM 114 implementation of this algorithm. I've implemented it in slightly different mode because that coefficients was not working for me. And it works with words splitted by bigrams. So basically you select some average sentence length, like 5 words in this case, and then you extract words in pairs. And then you get statistical token as combination of two words and their placement in text. So it's pretty much similar to, for instance, Facebook word embeddings. Word embeddings are more sophisticated in terms of learning. They can learn. They can study not only for like position of words, but the position of other environment. But in my case, it was enough. Because unfortunately, Facebook embeddings are not working for any language. So you need to build a corpus for a particular language and then do something with that. So another important thing in bias is to use metadata. So it's quite important that text data in emails is not so important as metadata. So if you look at some email from PayPal and email that pretends to be PayPal, but it's phishing email, they're very similar in terms of text. Furthermore, if you have some newsletter, it has very complicated like structure. It has tables, it has images, links, It has like logotypes. It has different buttons, stories, news. And this text is actually meaningless because this text gives you nothing. It's either too few words or too few meanings to distinguish it from spam. For instance, if you have some, if you need to distinguish a Nigerian spam from like technical Linux mailing list, then you can return text. Sorry. So if you look at text, you clearly see that this is spam, this is ham. If you see these complicated HTML messages from spammers and from real senders, I personally sometimes need some, maybe a minute, to understand if it's spam or not. What's going on? So bias in RSpamD just pushes everything, like headers order, headers capitalization, like number of images, number of recipients, position of MIME structure, and so on and so forth. So we consider lots of meta tokens in addition to normal tokens. So there is a special Lua library that extracts different metadata from messages and push it, mix it together with text data, and then everything goes through kind of bug of words, bug of tokens, and then statistically combined into bias model. So that's how bias works. And actually, it's quite good if trained well. Statistics are also stored in Redis or SQLite. SQLite is deprecated. I don't recommend to use it because it's not supported, really. And also, RSpamD supports like splitting of your statistics per user, per domain, per different things. So basically, you can just add header like bias ID and then split your statistics based on this ID, for instance, for different customers. Here are some quite old examples comparing RSpamD with Boga filter. Boga filter is actually very similar to spam assassin model, so they use pretty much the same things to distinguish messages. DSpam uses either the same model in OSB mode or its default settings. I'm not quite sure what it uses, to tell the truth. And DSpam was actually quite good in catching spam. But unfortunately, in case of DSpam, it has binary result, either spam or ham. So I think that statistical engine should produce at least three results. One is spam, one is ham, and one is I don't know. Because basically, what is ham is it doesn't mean that it's ham. It's just not enough statistical data. So that was bias. So many people ask me about why don't you use like modern stuff like neural networks. And actually, we use neural networks. So in way how we use it, it's quite simple. So it's multi-layer perceptron. On input, we have outcome of different rules and meta tokens. So what does it mean? So for instance, if you have like SPF allow, DKIM allow, DMARC allow, and bad IP reputation, bias spam, and message is less than, let's say, 16 kilobytes, then it's spam. Despite of all DMARC, DKIM, SPF, and actually spammers are using this stuff to send emails, and recently it's not a good indication of spam or ham. So I see lots of messages from banks that are ideologically signed with broken keys, with broken SPF, and so on and so forth. Banks are more or less okay, but other government letters are usually absolutely stupid. But spammers are very clever in that. So they just, instead of hacking of a user's machine running on Windows, they hack now virtual machines running in Amazon, DigitalOcean, and then they have send mail, fully functional MTA or postfix or whatever. And then they can send valid emails. And that's a big problem. So if you see DKIM, DMARC, SPF, everything, but your reputation and intelligence tells you that it's spam, then it's usually spam, despite of everything else. A neural network tries to find these like combinations and decrease gray zone between spam and ham. So if we find this combination, we tell that, okay, let's go it to spam. If we find that combination, then let's reduce score even more. So neural networks are very precise. So if you see some traffic flow, and if you train neural network on this traffic, then for each consequent message that matches this traffic flow, you would see almost 100% accurate result. The problem is that if your traffic flow changes, then you need to relearn your neural network, because actually this data is very volatile. I thought about like neural network for days of week, because if you see to distribution of traffic of emails, it has usually some sort of peaks in hours. It has some strange peaks at 4 a.m. It's midnight, 4 after midnight. Because many spammers are sending their email at midnight by cron job. So, and also you can see some sort of consequences. For instance, if this message was sent at 5 a.m. from some geographical region like US or Australia, I don't remember the geography. So you can imagine that probably it's fine because the time difference is different. So basically to adopt neural networks, you need to think more about how to isolate a traffic flow and the neural network that is good for this traffic flow. And that's actually a difficult task. So currently this module is not responding to my expectations, so I'm going to improve it significantly because there are lots of things that needs to be considered. So just if you use RSpamD, prepare for changes. Also, RSpamD provides lots of additional tools. So we have maps that can contain lots of elements. We have monitoring for RBL. So for instance, if some RBL starts to blacklist the whole world, RSpamD will turn it down. So we have DMARC, we have DMARC reports, we have SPFDKIM ARC. We have obviously URLs checks, emails checks, and we have reputation checks, and we have lots of additional tools to perform data analytics. What's more important, we have ClickHouse plugin. So what's interesting that actually RSpamD can be used to analyze your data flows. So for instance, that's my spam trap. So I can see what countries are sending spam to me, how many spam are sending, what autonomous networks are sending spam, what rules are usual for spam, and so on and so forth. So this is tooling called Redash, which runs on top of ClickHouse with some custom queries that are extracting data from RSpamD and publishing that. And this spam trap is used for fuzzy hashes. So basically, fuzzy hashing is a quite straightforward technique that is used in email for decades. It just tries to find messages that are similar to some particular message. And basically, RSpamD can get this spam trap data and push it to Redis. So internally, it uses Shingles algorithm. I think you can just read on the internet about it if you're interested. But one of the most important aspects of RSpamD, as far as I think at least, is that RSpamD can be extended. So RSpamD provides very extensive Lua API. So externally, you actually see that Lua part is not so significant comparing to C part in terms of lines of code. But the density of Lua is much higher than density of C. And in C, there are lots of utilities, lots of MIME stuff, lots of HTML stuff, so parsers and so on and so forth. But actually, the logic of RSpamD and the most recent additions to RSpamD are usually done using Lua. So you can see the amount of plugins that in Lua, there are about 50 plugins, and C plugins are just legacy. So to tell the truth, I have sometimes intentions to rewrite them to Lua just to simplify maintaining of them. So in Lua, there are lots of things that are written in Lua. So yeah, and we have more than 500 methods and functions in Lua API, and it's all documented. So you can just go and check examples, check individual methods, check existing rules. There is a special section now that is called Useful Lua Snippets. Feel free to add your own snippets who are using Respondi. So basically, it's like knowledge sharing about how to do this or that thing. Right. So almost everything is written in Lua. This slide is useless. So why Lua has been chosen? So first of all, it was Perl with some sort of these extensions to C language. Finally, I found that this language of Perl XS is not very clear, I'd say so. And I wanted to switch to some other embedded language which should satisfy the following factors. Minimum of external dependencies, so JavaScript and V8, no candidate. So there are now other minimalistic JavaScript engines such as Ducktape or V7, but they, in terms of performance, no. They should be simple. Okay, no Perl. And fast. Especially the problem is that you need to switch between C and interpreting language frequently. So you just go from C to Lua, from Lua to C, and so on. So this ping pong is very frequent, and these calls needs to be fast. Yes. That's the last point. So unfortunately, I don't see any other language that can satisfy these restrictions other than Lua. For Lua, there are other problems that LuaJIT is not actively supported. Playing Lua is not fast enough, and it tries to diverge from LuaJIT. So unfortunately, Lua has its own problems, but I don't know any other alternative. So in nutshell, Lua is a very simple language. So studying of Lua is actually studying of nothing if you know any other programming language, and even if you don't know any other programming language, but you want to study something. So it's very simple. Unlike other languages, there is only one data structure called table. So it's both hash and array. And what's very important for case of RSpMD that Lua is very function-oriented language. So the functions there are very verbose in terms of, you know, syntax, but actually you can write kind of in functional style in Lua. Yes. So basically Lua API in C is very simple. So it's just management of virtual stack, like push something to stack, get something from stack, call something, get results from stack, and so on and so forth. So basically, you operate with stack, get data, push data, and you are done. And rules in Lua are also very simple. So I'm just pushing this slide with this rule because it fits into one slide. And learning Lua is very straightforward as well. So that are just, you know. This plugin has been rewritten, by the way, in 1.9. So some conclusions, and I think my time is over. So RSpMD is a system that can scale from different systems, from personal emails running on one machine to large installations. It can use old machines, so I have some users who are using RSpMD on Pentium 4. And obviously, the vast majority of users are using something like AVX2. And when you run some certain operations like Base64 decoding, like encryption, hashing, it will use all things that are available from your CPU, like AVX2, IIS, and so on and so forth. So it can scale. And automatically, it can use advanced techniques like Hyperscan, LuaJIT, and specific CPU instructions. And as open source project, I'm very welcome contributions to both base code and to documentation and site. So basically, everything is available on GitHub. I'd like to say special thanks to my current employer, namely Mimecast, to Rumbler, who initiated this project, and to LocaWeb, this Brazil ESP, who are supporting RSpMD constantly with Yep. And that's time for questions. So I'm not quite sure. So if there are any questions. Yes. I think you need a button. Press button.
What's going to happen to RSpMD update?
So that's a long story. So first of all, I've created it in Lua, but actually I've decided that doing this in RSpMD is not a good idea because basically it's too complicated for doing it in Lua. So what I think about is to create some sort of Python helper or Perl helper, whatever. So something that runs independently of RSpMD and performs something like, okay, let's get these rules, plugins, something else from this place, verify signature, push it to RSpMD configuration, run RSpMadam config test, analyze what's going on. If nothing mad happens, then we reload RSpMD or restart if required, and that's how it should work. Because basically running this functionality inside of RSpMD is a bit overkill for like logic of this plugin. So I've tried it for like simple things like let's add this rule, let's add that rule. But the problem is that RSpMD internally for rules uses so-called symbols cache. And in this symbols cache, it implies that all rules are explicitly registered before using. It was created actually for neural networks, to tell the truth. But actually, it's not needed for neural networks. So I have some ideas about how to implement it dynamically, but I've not even did it because I think that creation of a dedicated daemon is less faulty and more error prone than creating this inside of RSpMD. Yes, any other questions? Okay, then I think we are done.